Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, how's it going? How you doing over there, Randy?
Good, let's see, it's good afternoon here. Good morning.
Good afternoon
to you.
There, good morning here, and if anyone's listening over in Europe, good evening almost, yeah. And on the East Coast, we've got 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So funny, I'll text people, I'm going to be on the show from 3 to 4, and then, I have to think, wait a minute, 9 to 10 here, 3 to, yeah. So,
yeah, depends on who you're talking to.
Yeah, and this is a good time of year for weather all over the place, it seems to be. It's a little hot in places, but at least we're not smack in the middle of winter. Now, some parts of the world are cold, but the U.S. isn't. So, I'm excited about today's show. We're actually going to be discussing the Affirmative Furthering Fair Housing Act, which has taken effect in October, and we want to get your opinion. So if you want to call in, please call in, or if you're listening to later and want to give us give comments, because it's only July, so we can definitely post those, and we'd love to continue this process because we'd love to see everybody get involved in this. And if you want to call in, it's 347-945-5428. And on our second half, Randy, we're going to go into letting you take that over.
Yeah, we've got Larry Lane is going to join us, and he is with an organization called Kingdom Catalyst. And basically the idea is to kind of one city at a time take over, basically have cities transformed in terms of crime, in terms of poverty, in terms of joblessness. There's just this movement called the City Transformation Movement that is...
Oh, I love it.
Based in biblical principles, but it's not, you know, overtly Christian. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Obviously, it's a Christian-based organization, but it's principles that are biblical principles that over several years now, they've done several cities where they've brought a team in and implemented the principles and seen cities transformed in terms of not just spiritually, but economically, crime-wise. And so, pretty cool thing. So I'm excited. I had coffee with Larry yesterday and asked him if he'd be on because it's pretty fascinating. And the proof is in the pudding, as they say. He's been involved. They've been involved in several cities worldwide that have just seen a transformation take place. And it's
I wonder if we can get. We'd love to get involved. That ties in very well with our first half of the show as well, with what's happening with the government HUD trying to transform the cities. This is going to be a great show, and exciting. So we're going to take a 1 minute break and just come right back and dig in.
Okay, hang on, we'll be.
It's your Minute with Maxwell. Here's author, speaker, and mentor to millions, your friend, John Maxwell.
How do I get off of the I think I'll do it to the do it stage? You see, many people, their life is something like this. Ready, aim, 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 aim. They never fire. They never shoot. They never execute. Now, let me just also say there are some people that's like, ready, fire, aim. And, you know, they don't execute either. They just shoot somebody accidentally. Execute means that there's a ready, preparation, aim, get your target, but then you shoot. The greatest gap in the world is the gap between knowing and doing.
Thanks, John. We trust we added value today. For the video version of The Minute with Maxwell, go to johnmaxwellteam.com.
And we are back, Realty Universal Radio, on the air everywhere. It's 12:05 on the West Coast. It's 9:05 in Hawaii, 3:05 on the East Coast, and et cetera, around the world. Natalie Mullinex with us, and again, we are, we've got a great show, and I love the way that without really comparing notes, it seems like often we have the first and second half kind of tie in. This first half, we're going to be talking about affirmatively furthering fair housing, and obviously we all need affordable housing, but is this going to be over the top? And this is a new program that's going to be starting up, and again, you can call us at 347-945-5428. That's 347-945-5428. And be happy to talk to you about it, or you can share, of course, your thoughts, or if you have questions for Natalie on this. And it's always good when a new program is being installed to kind of know what we're looking at before it gets going, right?
You know, and this is going to really take a strong effect starting in October if it goes through. It's going to be very controversial as well. And because we're doing the show right now in July, if you're listening in an archive, which many of our listeners do, please still get involved. Check in your community. Get involved. Make sure you're voting on where you can vote. And if you want to send us emails, you can send them to radio@realityuniversal.com. We'd love your input. We'll also post, because this is going to be an ongoing situation that's happening. Now, of course, the Fair Housing Act was put into effect in 1968. This is actually it's actually Affirmative Furthering Fair Housing Act. Now, a lot of the information we're going to be going by on the show today, because we only have less than 30 minutes, is we're taking information also from netrightdaily.com. So we want to give credit to where this source is coming from. You can check out the law. You can go up and Google Affirmative Furthering Fair Housing Act, FR-5173. You'll also see some previous laws, 90-284, that are interesting regarding integration and segregation. But if you Google Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Act, you're going to get quite a lot. And we hope you do and you get involved in this. Now, and we'd love your opinions if you want to call in and give us your input. We all definitely need affordable housing in many, many communities. Sometimes you see where builders actually put developments together and the people can come in and buy with lower incomes, and the government subsidizes part of this. Sometimes builders, communities, groups, block grants, so many different things can go into it, different ways that this can happen. We need that. I especially look at a place like Hawaii. Gosh, the housing is so expensive in areas that it would be nice for young families to get in the door. We really, really need. What they're doing with this, though, is they're actually talking about changing it to the concept really is, and this is taken again from NetRight Daily, is to change the enforcement paradigm in order to allow the Department of Housing and Urban Development to essentially decide what every neighborhood in America should look like. Under the regulation in October, the Obama administration will be empowered to condition eligibility for community development block grants on redrawing the zoning maps to create evenly distributed neighborhoods based on racial composition and income. That's you know, that can be, so what, basically with zoning, you've always had like different cities, counties, there's different zoning rules. Now we're talking about the United States here. And zoning basically will go on density, and they look at and they keep raw land and open land and parks and communities and room for schools, highways, roads. So basically you may have, like, if you notice in your community where you see single family homes and you'll see townhomes, apartments, you won't typically see commercial shops right in the middle of that. You'll see the shopping centers a little bit on the outskirts. So it depends where you are. But all of this is done so that everything flows well and you have clusters of groups of properties instead of like having your commercial industrial building right in the middle of your, you know, 50-home community development. What they're talking about doing is rezoning this so you could end up having a high-rise or a project kind of building right in the middle of 30 homes. It's definitely going to be controversial. Astor Reno was commenting, and again, this is in netrightdaily.com. He said the federal government's saying that if you live in a community that is disproportionately white, then therefore there is discrimination and segregation. So as such, the local community or the Justice Department wants to come in and do away with a lot of the zoning regulations that they feel restricts high-density housing in any neighborhood. Then they're saying, this is from Astorino, that they've already said that quarter-acre single-family residential zoning is potentially discriminatory. I don't see why. And what they would like to do is take away any restrictions that limit height, density, acreage, number of bedrooms in any community. I pray that they don't really mean that verbatim, because that would really hurt. That would really make a disaster out of many communities. So they're basically saying if you live in a quarter-acre or a half-acre residential neighborhood, the federal government is saying that a 13-story apartment building could be right in the middle of it. Government subsidized, because there needs to be equal mix in their view of ethnicity, of race, of income, et cetera. It's kind of scary. I mean, and not that people shouldn't have affordable housing, not that we shouldn't have, say, Section 8 and housing programs that actually let people come in and rent properties based on their income, based on what I do believe that we need to have affordable. I like to see affordable where people can actually have the American dream and be able to buy versus just renting, you know, so that they have an asset that they can turn over to their future generations. And I'm really excited about the second half of this show because Larry Lane's going to discuss what they're doing to help people in communities. And, you know, we really need to empower people to further themselves instead of just taking things. And these subsidies are very good for a short-term effect. I don't think all this was put in effect years ago when it started for people to make it a lifetime effect. So this is, my opinion, and I'm just going over a lot of it pretty quickly because we'd run out of time here on the show, unfortunately, it's a little scary. In 2012, HUD dispersed about $3.8 billion of these grants to almost 1,200 municipalities. This was quoted from National Council of La Raza, is to be believed. The new rule will help millions of illegal immigrants resettle into communities across the U.S. According to La Raza's comment in favor of the regulation, Hispanic families often do not know their housing rights and have cited fear of deportation as reason for not reporting rights violations. Now, we give our opinion on the show, Randy. We do. We just do, right? Because we're private. But I don't want to say that it's going to help illegal immigrants. You know, this whole country was founded on people coming in, and people were from other parts of the world. So we love people coming in immigration. That's part of what America was founded on, is to bring people in from all walks of life. Of course, it was based in Christianity, but not turning away anybody else, and people from all walks of life. So I'm all for immigrants coming in. The illegal part, no, because we all are supposed to follow the rules, right? So that's a different story. So I don't know, but I do see with this ruling, they are basically telling the, if you don't do it, if these cities and counties don't do it, we're not giving you monies. So we're not giving you funding. And so there, you may find a lot of people turning away the money like they're doing with the Obama, the health care bill right now. And then, you know, the residents are going to suffer. So in the meantime, a trial run for implementing the rulemaking has already begun in Westchester County, New York. It said there's lawsuits being fought right now, filed. In Westchester, HUD has attempted to rezone the area along racial and income guidelines as a condition for receiving millions in the block grants. County Executive Rob Astorino, and that's who we just spoke about, a Republican, is fighting back. He rejected the receipt of $5 million of grants from 2012. They lost out on $7 million other grants in 2011 for the same reason. It's quoted in here again as saying, it's unfortunate that HUD, which claims to champion the needy, once again is threatening to withhold funds for affordable housing. It's not fair. Do you see how it's just wrong the way this is going down? Said Astorino, spokesman Ned McCormick in April. But the county is not going to turn over control of the local zoning of its 6 cities, 19 towns, and 20 villages to bureaucrats in Washington for $5 million in grants. HUD's been demanding that the county build 750 units of affordable housing in 31 more affluent communities. Now, that's, you know, it's kind of difficult, though, and I want to get your input, too, Randy, on, you know, if it, we have different areas and different people can pay for certain things. It's not, and things cost more. You know, if you're in certain neighborhoods and you have to pay $1 million for your house, you'll find a lot of things in that neighborhood are going to cost more anyhow. But from what it sounds like what they're doing in the rezoning is actually letting all different types of properties come into an area, meaning, and not so much racial or income, just changing the rules, changing the single-family beautiful look to, you know, you've got your townhomes beautiful look, just everything conforms. And it sounds like it's trying to mix it all up in a little bit, and it's kind of scary. So what does that sound like to you? Isn't that a little scary? And not for the racial makeup. I think they're kind of putting it in there under a different guise.
Yeah, well, it kind of seems like we are, you know, again, enabling to some degree. It feels like my question, as you were describing the scenario where they can put the low-income housing in you know, upper middle class or upper class neighborhoods. I mean, as a realtor, right? people are very aware in upscale neighborhoods. Anything that might lower property value, and this certainly would, wouldn't it? I mean,
yeah, it definitely would. It would definitely hurt property values. But it's going to make it, it's like, they should have affordable housing and they should have buildings and places for affordable housing, although I believe the affordable housing should be more on affordable ownership than just renting, right? And teaching people how to get jobs, get the builders involved, get grants, get monies put involved so we can say, hey, we can sell you this house for $200,000 that would have cost more because we're going to work this out with you. But what they're talking about, when you start rezoning, I've been in this for so long that I've seen so many zoning issues, been involved in taking communities from raw land to record plat years ago, and just so many things that there's a purpose, there's a reason we have forestation where for so many trees you take out, you replace so many trees. There's a reason we have our parks. There's a reason you have commercial zoning in commercial areas, and there's a reason you have residential in residential areas. This just definitely, it's not fair if they're saying basically what they're saying, and you need to read the rule, we need to, you know, word by word, but they're saying that potentially they could say, hey, if this neighborhood is all of one race, that they were quoting white, but I don't want to say white, it could be any race. If it's just all one race, then we need to break that up and rezone to make it work, and it just is. I think this ties in where we've talked about the government wanting to do away with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which I think is going to be a mess too. So I, you know, I always want to believe that there's good intentions on some of this, but some of this is going to be a mess, a total mess. And it's not fair to withhold funds when these communities, I can guarantee you, communities, you know, do have things set up for like homeless shelters and other groups and other organizations and funding. I know there's quite a lot of money out there for not just Section 8 programs. There's homeless programs, homeless assistance shelters. There's a lot of states that have been given money to get people into homes. But the difference in that is they're getting into homes that are that should be a single family home in a community, and they're getting in there and they're getting assistance. They're not telling, you know, it hasn't been where they've told the community, I'm sorry, you've got, you know, 50 beautiful luxury homes here, and now we're going to stick a high rise in the middle of it, you know. So it's definitely.
It just feels, I mean, I don't, and, you know, you've been in this business a long time, as you know, that it just seems like this would never have ever happened, ever, in an economy where the market is driving things, right? Where it's more market driven, it's more small government, it's more, you know, business, let business and the market dictate, which is, you know, I think Reaganomics and, you know, all of that era, if you will. This just again feels like it's the government telling people what they have to do. And
what is, you know, I agree. You know, we need to be able to have capitalism, you know, entrepreneurs, right? And we all know, I mean, most of us entrepreneurs end up, you know, when you run your businesses, small businesses, you end up putting more money in the businesses than you'd ever get, basically. You know, when you're, which isn't always the best way to do things, but people work hard to have what they have and to do what they're doing and to raise their families. It is, you know, so it's not fair to say, hey, if you worked harder and made this work, then we need you to split up your neighborhood. It's just wrong, because people need to learn to live within their means, but people need to learn, you know, when you're cutting back, you don't go out to dinner much, you don't go to the movies, you cut back on any extras, right? If you're short on money, and I think with which is going to be wonderful in our second half today, that's what people need to learn and be taught. This is doing the exact opposite, but in addition, people are going to really have a problem, because, you know, it's not right. It's just going to who's going to decide how they're redistricting? Okay, so they're going to say this is an affluent community. Everybody here can afford to pay this much for their house. If someone can afford to pay that much for their house and they worked to pay for it, why should they be told, now we're going to lower everything and you're just going to have to deal with this? It's just, I remember back in the early 90s, the federal government was going around it to the cities, and they said, we're going to literally like blow up, like tear down a lot of project buildings, because we want people to segregate that have been in the projects with the counties. I remember specifically in Maryland, Dutch Ruppersberger was in county councilman then. Back then, I mean, so he was county councilman back then. And he was upset because he said, hey, the federal government and the city didn't even confer with us. They just told us, here, now we're going to be handing out all these vouchers and we're going to tear down these buildings so people have nowhere to move, but we're going to give them vouchers for housing assistance so we can move them into the counties, because we believe if we blend it, they're going to learn more. They're going to learn more. And we were talking about not, you know, areas where there was a lot of crime. And, I mean, I remember watching on TV, seeing the explosives, you know, knock down these buildings. This is something that, you know, and their idea was, if you get into situations where there is high crime and you mix that, the people in that were used to having high crime into the other neighbor, it was going to help them. To me, that it's like, no, educate people, you know, educate people. So to get into the environment where people aren't doing, because there's many people doing the right thing too in projects. So I'm not judging. I'm just saying, but it's educate and get people to where they go, and they're proud to make it on their own. And, you know, God in the Bible does not say just sit there and take handouts, right? I mean, if you biblically look at things, you're supposed to clearly work and you know, laziness doesn't do it, right? Now, that's different when someone has a disability and they can't work. But we need to be teaching, come on, we can do it. You can do it. You can go make the money. And it's not about the material stuff, but if people work hard, you know, they work hard, they pay more money for certain schools, certain things. It's just, to me, I have a problem with what's going on. So, but that's what we need. People need to get involved. It's so important to vote. It's so important to find out what the issues are. I constantly still hear people go, well, my vote doesn't count. I'm not going to be bothered. And we can't do that. It's not fair to their kids or for your grandchildren or futures. This is, I don't see it. I don't see this positive. Now, Astoria, Reno said they actually, in Westchester County, New York, they filed a lawsuit, and he reminded the residents that when HUD brought its case, well, actually, HUD brought its case against the county. The deputy secretary of HUD, or they're in a lawsuit now, I should say, deputy secretary of HUD said at the time, Westchester is a test case for the rest of the country. Sure enough, in 2009, Ron Sims, deputy secretary at HUD, said, we clearly are messaging other jurisdictions across the country that there has been a significant change in the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and we're going to ask them to pursue similar goals as well, adding that Westchester can serve as a model for building strong, inclusive, sustainable communities in suburban areas across the entire United States. So we're almost running out of time, but it's... you know, it's strange to me because we're in trillions and trillions of dollars of debt, but yet there's all this money to throw into some of this stuff that isn't bringing more money in. It's, you know, I would rather see some of that money go into educating, get down to kindergarten, first grade, get into our education system, teaching people about finances, about values, about, you know, I'd love to see God being brought back in the schools, but, you know, that's going to be that. But getting into taking that money and educating instead of spending all the money rezoning, tearing things down, you know, getting everybody up in arms, I just don't see where the win-win is here at all. I just don't, you know. We get tax, so if you make more money, you're paying more taxes, and that money goes back into the cities and government. You know, so it just economically – it's just becoming a mess. It doesn't seem like this is anything in the positive direction. Now, the way it can be portrayed, if somebody's like, oh, I love that, you know, I want to go live here for free, that's, you know, it's just a mess. So
yeah, well,
our
just
time's
feels,
up.
Again, it feels like, I'll just say it, it feels like socialism and not capitalism, you know, is what it feels like, you know. And
definitely.
It's just... And it's so different. It's a different America right now. And you're right. I think anybody who, you know, has a problem or, you know, disagrees needs to make their, you know, their vote known, their voice known. And because, you know, it's interesting, boy, once people start doing that, and a significant number do, you know, they do begin to pay attention in Washington, and they, you know, it does begin to change things, but it, you know, like you said, I think there's this malaise among, you know, voters that it just doesn't matter anymore, and it's almost like right before our very eyes, our country is, you know, is changing, and I mean dramatically, and, I mean, we don't mean to get political, but here goes. Like Brian Regan, the comedian, goes, I don't want to make fun of anybody's religion, but here goes. And he starts to tell this joke about clairvoyance. But anyway, I'm just saying in terms of politics that I follow several friends who are in the news, radio news business, and there was an AP story yesterday that the Obama administration basically, despite the Supreme Court ruling that, you know, it's unconstitutional and the administration is overreached, you know, in terms of presidential directives, mm-hmm. they're going to continue funding certain things in Obamacare in spite of the Supreme Court ruling. So it's like, I just read that and went, again, you read that and go, what? You know? But I think so many people, frankly, are worried about how they're going to pay their mortgage, how they're going to feed their kids, you know, that I honestly, I just, anyway, we could get off on the political thing, and we might get into a little bit of that with with Larry here in the next half hour, because a transformation takes place at all kinds of levels across the spectrum, and we're gonna get into that. So really, it's interesting again that you know, that without really comparing notes, I mean, the first half segues very nicely into the second half.
Yeah.
And let's dive right in, because looks like Larry is on the line with us right now. Let's go to the phones in there. Hey, Larry Lane, how are you, buddy?
I am fine, Randy. How are you?
Doing well. Natalie's on the line with us.
Larry, thanks for coming on. And our first half was talking about affirmatively furthering the Fair Housing Act, which ties in so well with what you're doing in communities. I can't wait to hear.
Yeah. Well, let me introduce Larry real quick. Larry's served as a pastor for 32 years before launching a new ministry, and it's called Kingdom Catalyst in 2012. Kingdom Catalyst formed to assist the faith community in their pursuit of city transformation. And at the beginning of the year, Larry was asked to serve as a regional director for the Journey to Transformation by researcher and film producer George Otis Jr. And Larry also serves as the director for Northern California Academy of Leadership, which is the 10-month business leadership program designed for upper management and CEOs in Northern California. So, busy guy. So glad you could take some time with us today, man.
I always love hanging with you, Randy. You know that.
I do know that. I love hanging with you, man. It's and we have to, full disclosure, Larry at one point was my pastor. And so now he's...
Oh,
he's,
awesome.
And now he's just my friend. And we talked about that yesterday.
And he
yesterday.
Can't do it. You weren't too damaged, what? Were you, Randy? You weren't too damaged, were you?
Not at all. No, not at all. And, you know, like I said, we could go so many ways, you know, in this conversation. Maybe love to have you back, talk some theology and stuff at some point. But today, really, and especially in light of what... Natalie was talking about in the first half, where again our government is stepping in and making communities make room for affordable housing, doing some things that it just feels more and more. And we'll start here since we kind of ended the second half here. It feels more and more like our world in America has shifted from. You know, from a capitalistic society or capitalism to socialism. It just feels that way, and it seems like it's happening before our very eyes without us even paying attention. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that you know, it's hard to speak for all Americans, but there certainly is an angst that has come over much of the American people as they feel like they've lost control of their government. And the intrusiveness is increasing at a tremendous pace. I think, Randy, you actually captured it incredibly well when you said, but most people are so caught up with their day-to-day life, trying to provide care, so forth. And sadly, and we've seen this repeated in history, people tend not to get involved until it comes right to their front porch. And by then, sometimes it's too late to make a difference.
Do you know, Larry, I wanted to read our first half because it wasn't planned. We were talking about affirmatively furthering Fair Housing Act, which is going in October. And then Randy said you were coming on to talk about what you're doing with the cities. And it's so affirmatively furthering Fair Housing Act is talking about really rezoning the communities and the cities in ways that isn't going to make sense. And we were just going over all that. And it's so important to teach people, you know, God's principles, teach people how to get out and work and teach, put the monies and support into teaching people how to go make it and be productive citizens rather than say, hey, I don't want to do it, just have the government give me something, even if they're not disabled, you know? So this ties in beautifully with what you do. I just wanted to point that out, because some of our listeners will listen archive and, you know, hear both sides, both sections.
There's obviously numerous things going on around us that are incredibly concerning. The question, of course, becomes what can we do about it? And I do sort of draw a line. I don't know if it's a line, but certainly make a distinction between the actions we take as responsible citizens that have incredible privilege in this country to be involved in government and change. And I think we have a responsibility. You know, I think as a Christian, I mean, I have heard over and over again the statistics about how many Christians don't vote. And it's just appalling to me. It's just appalling to me. I remember years ago one of my friends was going into political office, and he went off to a seminar, and the first thing they told him was, don't count on the Christian vote. I mean, that's just sad. Now,
really?
having said that, I mean, that's a problem in itself. I am not convinced personally that this country can be turned around by political means. And as much as I will do everything I can as a citizen, I do think that the core of our issues and problems are not political but spiritual. And until we address the heart issues, change will not be large scale or sustainable.
Yeah. Well, it gets back to that really that all, you know, that we are spiritual beings, and this is a spiritual dynamic that's going on, you know, below the surface, below the headlines, below the all of the hoopla on TV and all that. So let's dig in, man. What do you mean when you say city or community transformation? What are we talking about?
Yeah, and it's interesting. The last, you know, 5-10 years, I mean, transformation has become such a buzzword. If you go on the internet, you'll just find a bazillion different understandings or meanings of it. So I have a very, very narrow definition of what I am talking about, and it really grew out of this researcher, George Otis. So even before he came on the scene, I had a heart passion to study history, and particularly how in different parts of history the Christian faith community, the church, had seen a resurgence in spiritual life in such a way that it overflowed into the community and brought about amazing changes, pervasive changes in every aspect of society. And in America particularly, we've had waves of this in our past. Though we have not seen this sort of thing take place probably in the last 100 years, but in the first 200 years of our country, there were at least 3 or 4 waves of this that brought about wholesale social change and sort of grabbed the nation by the neck and pulled it up. So I'm hesitant, but I've also studied in Europe and other places where this has taken place. So I have this passion for this. So when I talk about transformation, I'm talking about something that takes place in the faith community, a resurgence and our spiritual renewal that sort of so aligns them with God that something spills over into the whole community. It's not, and the change doesn't come through political action. It doesn't come through any sort of aggressive takeover of anything. But there's a recognition in the whole community that something has shifted and changes. And these, I can give you story after story after story, even contemporary parts of the world where this has taken place. So this is my passion. This is where I think the hope of our nation is that one community, one city, one region at a time has this renewal, revival. I almost hate to use the word revival again, a loaded word, but that is what it is. It's a transformative revival that spills over to the community and brings about heart change and out of that tremendous social change. And even physical changes in the land. That's a whole other story I can tell, what's happened in different places where there's been a healing of the land and there's been tremendous increase in agricultural production or return of so forth that have taken place. Amazing stories.
Well,
can we have your website or how they contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. And my own website is kingdomc.org,
And she is in charge. Okay, Christ, okay.
She is in Catalyst, she's in Catalyst, right, kingdomcatalyst.org. And then as I work with as a regional director with this Journey to Transformation, their website is jttusa.com.
JTTUSA.com.
And again, we're talking with Larry Lane. We're talking about city community transformation. And let's kind of dig in a little further with this, because obviously this isn't something that, you know, is theory. Bunch of theologians and whoever got together and said this should happen, but this has happened. And George Otis, and the Journey to Transformation and the videos talk about some of the history and what's gone on in other cities, other countries with this Journey to Transformation.
Well, back in the late 90s, I had already been on my own passionate pursuit most of my life for this thing that I read about in history. And then George Otis produced a documentary, which he called Transformations, in which he looked at four communities that undergone contemporary communities this sort of change. I think the most significant ones on that first video were a little community in Amalanga, Guatemala, in which the community went from, this is factual, from 90% of the people were alcoholics or in somehow abusive relationship with alcohol to almost none within a few years. Mm. They went from four jails that were overflowing, and they had to actually bus some of the people on the weekends. They had so many people in the jails, to closing the jails completely because of nothing going on. They went from a sort of arid agricultural area, impoverished area, to a fertile valley. It's been called now the breadbasket of the Latin America there. This little community, I mean, this, you'll see on this documentary, literally, the vegetables grew larger. I mean, they show pictures of carrots the size of a man's arm.
Wow.
They have their growing season has shrunk from, they said, like these 4-pound beets that they grow, shrunk from 60 days to 40 days. Now they're harvesting every 28 days. They used to have 4 trucks a month that left the community full of vegetables. They now have 40 trucks a week that leave. I mean, it is and researchers from around the world have come there and say, so that is one example. And on a larger scale, Cali, Colombia went through some remarkable change from being a city controlled by the drug cartels, from the drug cartels being completely removed from the city, crime declining, so forth. So there's these incredible pictures. And George put this on in a documentary. And what happened after he did the documentary is it went out virally around the world, and he, within 6 months, he had 50,000 emails all saying,
wow,
this is amazing. How can we have this happen in our community? And he wrote back, I don't know. You know, he's a researcher, but he just documented the thing. He had no idea. So he spent the last 15 years researching about 200 historical cases and now about 800 contemporary cases around the world. Unfortunately, these are the things that don't make the news. 800 of them around the world.
Wow.
And
he said that there actually are patterns and principles, things that apparently God will respond to if we do them. And that's what he recruited me to do, to be a trainer and facilitator for communities interested in learning about how to attract the healing presence of God to transform their community. So
something
I get to do now.
Wouldn't that be wonderful if we could just have it in the school systems when the kids were babies, when they're in first grade?
Absolutely. And it touches – what we've learned is that when these things take place, it does touch every aspect of society. There's nothing left. It's almost like – to use this example, it's like God comes in and does divine chiropractics and allows them the way they do good again. And every aspect of society is touched. And then it's responsibility of the people – to kind of steward that as they go forward. How do they maintain these things that God has stepped in and done?
Oh, my God. How do we get involved? Because we have a membership association. Remember, you know, they broker some different states.
That's what I do. I'm working right now with different communities that are starting in this journey. I mean, you can just contact me, and if you want to sit down and have an information meeting and gather some leaders, that's what I do. I talk.
I can tell stories.
I can show things and say, this is how you move forward, and then I just kind of coach you along the way.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow, Randy, isn't this awesome?
Yeah.
I'm getting chills. I've got the goosebumps. You can just feel the love pouring out because it's so, and you've got the structure with it, and God's, this is amazing. Just amazing.
So you've got the documentaries. You've got the documentaries. And literally, like you say, now this kind of, template, I mean, you know, in terms of, as you said, there are certain things that have been documented that, you know, are consistent, right? Consistent.
Yeah, I mean, every one of these. Yeah, no, they're exactly right. I mean, George is has high integrity as a researcher, and he says that what these principles are, what these patterns are things that are true in every single case, all nearly 1,000. If it was only true in half of them, he doesn't include it because he's just very careful because he feels like he's dealing with holy things here and he wants to be very careful. And he's produced a number of more documentaries since then, and if anyone's interested, I'll give you another website. It's called Sentinel Group, SENTINEL Group.org. And you can actually either purchase or you actually have it where you can actually download these, kind of rent them, download them, these documentaries, and you can view them. Nothing is better for people to see it firsthand and just go, you've got to be kidding. You know, some of the stuff that I can tell you stories in Fiji that have taken place where coral reefs that have been dying have come back to life. And again, that's never supposed to happen. The whole Cousteau, the researchers are out there looking how this happened. Fish that had been absent from them for 50 years came back. Waters poisoned and got healed. I mean, it's just remarkable.
So what do you do? You go in and say, okay, if you want to work with me, we're going to, just so our listeners can hear, you go in and say, okay, we're going to, what do you do? Do you have the scriptures in the Bible or a pattern or an outline, a blueprint? I mean, how do they get started so that there's structure?
Yes, there is. I mean, what we tend to like to have happen is that after we find a group of people that show interest, we do have what we call a discovery weekend, which is sort of an intense teaching time and unpacks all these principles. And it's about 15 hours of teaching over 2.5 days. That's what I do. I actually, myself and usually have another partner, will teach this.
In person or over the Internet?
Oh, no, in person. We'll go in person and do this. And then, you know, interspersed with that are video clips and so forth, kind of things I talked about so people get to have some firsthand acquaintance with the validity of these stories and these principles. And then after that, you know, the community can decide, you know, and by the end of those 2.5 days, they have a pretty clear picture of what's involved in terms of what this journey looks like, what's the personal commitment involved. Because honestly, and this is one of the key principles, transformation has to be personal before it becomes corporate. That God has to do some things on our own heart before he does it in our community. So, yeah, so the journey you do with your own self and your own stuff, you know, and then
you're going to get rid of all our stuff in 15 hours? Whoa. No, I'm just kidding.
No,
I'm kidding.
No, we tell you what it is. It may take you a little longer to unpack that. I'm still unpacking it myself. I was just sharing with Randy the other day about some of the stuff that I've had to deal with that have been revealed in my own heart. So it's a personal journey and is it a corporate journey? It's both. And then in that journey, you know, I help. We have some follow-up materials and just sort of help coach. But what we try not to do, and my role is not to control this thing. This is about a group of people from a community really realigning themselves with God to hear from God and to follow, you know, these principles, but it's their own journey. You know, I can tell you this, in each of these communities, there's certain things that are true in everyone and certain things that are unique in everyone. Because God doesn't always do repeat performances. He likes creativity and he does different things. So, yes, it's not a controlling thing. Oh, here's 4 steps and your community's transformed. I wish it was that easy.
Yeah.
If it was, there'd be a lot more.
Sometimes
it's in our own hearts. And when God begins to say, okay, you need to deal with this, this, and this, and then we're like, oh, you know, I really like all those changes out there. I don't know if I like all these changes in here.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. We're talking to Larry Lane. He's with Kingdom Catalyst, and again, kingdomc.org, his website. We're talking about the city, the transformation, the journey to transformation going on, George Otis, the filmmaker, and how Kingdom Catalyst is kind of connecting with and partnering with the journey to transformation. And again, it sounds like, Larry, so you get an interested, you know, group, and this could be a pastor or two. It could be, what, businessmen, political leaders, kind
Absolutely.
Of a mixture? Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit, a couple steps, how you do that in a city. Just take a city for an example and then say, okay, what do we do?
I'll give you some examples locally here because I'm working with some communities right around here.
Okay.
Initially, Oroville, California actually had a Discovery Weekend, and they have, after that, nearly 100 people they're meeting every other week just to begin to discuss, pray, this journey.
Wow.
And so I'm in touch with them. Out of that group, there was a few people from Red Bluff that were there. Interesting how they got there. The district attorney for Red Bluff, or Tehama County, contacted the pastors and said, listen, we've got issues in this community, and we need your help. It was sort of a wake-up call, and the pastors felt like they were rightfully sort of slapped in the face and said, get with it. So a few of them went to heard about this and transformation. Once we came back, and what they decided to do, which was really a good way to build hunger and interest in this, they have been over the summer showing the different documentaries and calling church members together on a Sunday evening about every other week or so, and showing them, and they're building a consensus of people and saying, man, we want to see this happen in our community. And then they will look, they're talking about trying to host their own Discovery Weekend sometime this fall. And then out of that, the journey continues. So that's typically what will happen. You want to build a consensus of a group of people, you know, that catch it, understand it, and then move towards a Discovery Weekend. And the best way to do this is by showing the documentaries. They're so compelling.
Well, and as you say, God responds to the heartbeat, and it doesn't have to be this exact pattern, although I'm sure you have steps that you recommend, and, you know, that some of them, you know, may, I don't know if they're must-dos, but ones that you go, hey, we, you know, A, B, C, we really need to do this at this point. But you start developing, I'm guessing, groups who are involved in, say, schools and groups in politics. And, you know, I've heard people talk about the, you know, the different pillars of influence in a community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's politics, there's, you know, obviously the church, but then school system as well, and maybe law enforcement, and maybe just you start looking for other people that are in those groups. And I imagine just the talking about it, right, and the praying about it, and the awareness that begins to bubble up just begins to...
Let me tell you a quick story, Randy, because I was just back in a little community of Manchester, Kentucky, in Clay County, kind of in the foothills of Appalachia. They went through one of those transformation times. They were in a desperate condition. They had about 50% unemployment in that county.
Oh, yeah.
And they also had, and I hear the stories, it's hard to believe this is true in America, but the corruption in their government was so bad that most all the political leaders and law enforcement were connected with the drug community, and it had become the prescription drug capital of the East, I think, or much of the U.S. I mean, it was horrible. And their children were either overdosing or committing suicide. They said the highways began to look like picket fences from all the little crosses that were put up for kids.
And
what happened, they got so desperate that, and up to that point, the churches had been all doing their own thing and not paying attention, just kind of having their head in the sand. And it got so bad that the churches came together and they started praying on a Saturday, every Saturday, and actually members of the community, just people who were involved in church, were so concerned about their community, they started showing up too and literally began to cry out to God. I mean, it wasn't your safe little, you know, sweet little prayers. They were crying out to God, you know, just our families, everything's falling apart here. One of the members of that group got a vision, a picture of them doing a march. One of the core issues for them was they'd been so passive and let so many things happen on their watch that they decided that doing a march, and they really called the march enough. They were, this is enough. We're going to stand together and send out a signal that we need God, and this is the, we want to see things change. And it was a dangerous thing. I was talking to a couple of the pastors, said, and they were getting death threats and so forth from the drug community.
This really?
Was scary stuff. Oh, yeah. This was really, really high-profile thing. You better not do this type of thing. And the morning that they were supposed to do the march, it was rainy, it was miserable, and they thought, oh, who's going to even show up? And this is not a big area. It's a small community. Manchester City is only about 1,200, 1,300 people. On that morning, 44,000 people showed up to march.
Oh, wow.
They marched down.
That gives me the chills. That's so God-given.
Oh, yeah.
That's
they
so awesome.
Marched down, and they marched into this park, raining, and the pastors from all over the region knelt in the mud and just cried out to God, asking forgiveness for being more concerned about their churches than their community. And at that moment, they'll tell you, I talked to these people, he says, we can't explain it unless you were here. We could feel the presence of God come into the whole community.
Wow.
And everything began to change. And part of what began to happen in cooperation, all of a sudden the FBI came in and so forth, and they've had,
wow,
I think, 14 political leaders that have gone off to prison, and everything's changing, corruption's gone, and in terms of actually the physical nature of the community, things started growing that hadn't grown before, that attracted bears, and elk have come back, and so they've seen a change in the ecology. The schools that were so riddled with drugs are now drug-free. It's just an amazing story. So I was back there talking to those folks. So I saw it firsthand and shared with those people. This is the kind of thing that can happen when we get desperate enough about the condition of our community and are willing to do whatever it takes to see God come and change things.
God can move mountains. I love it. Does it tie in like with Celebrate Recovery and things like that, like in a format? Because I'm just wondering how the groups get to where they keep it going. That's, you know, how they have some kind of syllabus.
A number of programs have developed to sustain these things. Exactly. You know, you'll see a lot of things. And that's typically what's happened, as I mentioned, throughout history, where social reform and programs have developed to help sustain what God initiated.
Oh, can we say a prayer that, you know, they'll put it in the school system at some point? Maybe not in the next couple of years. No, I'm just kidding. Just amazing.
That.
Wouldn't it be great if they just had it and it brought God back and had these, at least the systems put into the, to show the little ones, but...
I'm reminded of that verse, you know, obviously that we repeat on, you know, on days of national days of prayer and stuff, but if my people will humble themselves and pray, you know, and I think of that verse when I hear you describe that, I will hear them and I will respond, and you probably know that by heart, Pastor, I don't know it all, but.
If my people who are called by thy name will humble themselves and seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then I will forgive their sin and heal their land.
Wow.
Goosebumps, baby, right there. Got the goosebumps on that one. That's the Word of God, and that's what you've just talked about. If you're just tuning in, we're right about at the end. The good news is this is archived, and you can listen and actually download and pass along this last half hour. This has been powerful. And again, Larry Lane, his website is kingdomc.org, kingdomc.org, and Kingdom Catalyst is the name of the organization, and the journey to transformation is what we've been talking about. And literally, and I know this guy, and he lives for this stuff. And so if you want to contact Larry about your community, it's the beautiful thing is, right, no town too small, right? It's anybody that wants.
In fact, I'll give you my email address. It's larry@kingdomc.org.
Okay.
Awesome.
larry@kingdomc.org. We've got about 60 seconds left, and I just, again, man, we just began to scratch the surface because...
Oh, this is wonderful. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back, and It is the issue. You said it. You know, the first half we got all frustrated talking about some of this political stuff that's coming down the pike, and we're being forced, you know, in certain ways to do things, and you start to feel this frustration. And Larry, you brought it back around, and you helped us realize, you know, that it's a spiritual problem that we're dealing with, and we can be frustrated about politics, and this isn't about a political deal, or is it? It's about a spiritual renewal and a change that's lasting, right?
Yeah. It's about hope. There is hope.
Mm. Awesome, buddy. Thank you so much, man, and we're going to have to get you back.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. This was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. It's wonderful. We'll be in touch, too. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.